Today we're going to study the Kruvim. The Kruvim are the... Kruvim, how do we say them? Cherubs, they translate them, right? You know why we translate them as cherubs?
Because the non-Jews
translate. Why do the non-Jews translate them as cherubs? Kruvim, cherubs? Because nobody has any idea what they are.
Yeah.
Right.
So they just made up a word?
Cherubim, the cherubim. So when you say cherubim, what do you have in mind? You have in mind the...
These little angelic things.
Angelic what? What do you have in mind? You have, this is really important because we're going to talk about this.
Little
Cupid baby with the wings. That is totally Christian.
With curly hair.
With curly hair?
Yeah.
That's not curly hair.
But I always thought Kruvim just meant close. Karov.
Look, Kruvim, okay, with a kuf, is Karov. Here, there, Kruvim is... From Kruvim with a cuff. That's Kruv, no?
Cabbage.
How do you spell Kruv? With a cat with a cuff?
Kruv is with a cuff.
You can look it up. Yeah. Okay, that sounds right. So we'll see, is that connected? By the way, it would make sense. Why does that make sense?
Are they cabbages?
Well, no, they're not cabbages. Well, let's see. Okay. we're gonna obviously read the psukim as we always do. The Kruvim didn't come by themselves. The Kruvim were part of something larger. Yeah? Kruv, cabbage? Cabbage. Okay? By the way, what? Fascinating. I have no idea why it would be called Kruv, because it's not from Karov.
No, it's
okay? Kruv. Anyway, well, do they have etymology?
Kruv, cabbage, hand.
That's right. Do they have the etymology of the word Kruv? No, there's this woman in Orod. I have to ask her now what she thinks the etymology of the word is. She's our language specialist. Anybody raise anything, she edits everything. There's always somebody like that. Perakaf he, pasuk yud zayin. Okay? We're going to do the kaporet. Kruvit is cloud, right. What's the connection between cauliflower and cabbage?
That's
right. Va'asita perek kafei pasuk yudzayin. And we're going to actually, I'm going to use this as a jumping off point as we, whenever we get to these parashiyot, they're challenging, they're difficult to study because they are very, very, how shall we say this, nuanced, detailed blueprints of, that we're in Parsha Truma. Truma, or we're in Perek Kafhei Pasuk Yudzayin. Kafhei Yudzayin. They're very, very detailed, minutiae descriptions of the different vessels that were constructed in the Mishkan. So this week is Truma, which is the vessels of the Mishkan. Next week is Tetzaveh, which is about a vast majority of that is the Big Day Kohen Gadol. Then we have a brief Kitisa, which is some Mishkan, but some, you know, Cheda Egel, so there's always what to talk about. And then we have two more weeks of Vayakel and Pekudei, which is again, Vayakel is just a repetition of Truma. And Pekudei, what? It's your part. Oh, nice. And they're going to do both? Oh, they could split it though. They're going to split it, right? Oh, that's not fair. They should both do it twice. Okay, and Pekudei.
And make everybody else in a short. Torture.
Whatever. And Pekudei is a repetition of Tetzaveh. Just so you know, but this year, instead of having to suffer through, they're separate because it's a leap year, so we do it slowly. Which makes life harder for me because now I have to find something motivating to say on each of the parshiyot.
That helps us for next year.
Thank you. Well, for you for next year. Okay. Okay. So we're going to talk about the kaporet. Kaporet is a fascinating thing. We're going to talk about it with the Kruvim. And obviously, what most of the parshanim do is they try to find a deeper message in the symbolism that's inherent in the kli itself, in the vessel itself. So we're gonna do that, okay? But it's gonna give me the opportunity to say some social commentary about what I think is wrong with the Jewish world today, which is my prerogative. Okay, I would say wrong. Oh, something that we need to strengthen. No, we need to strengthen. I think it's an important thing to strengthen. Vasita kaporet zahav tahor. You shall make a kaporet of pure gold. It's 2.5 amot in length and 1.5 amot in width. An amma is a foot and a half mount. So this whole thing, this kaporet, is 2.5 by 1.5. Okay? Pretty small. What is this thing? Where are we? So just so you understand, we had the Aron. Look, go back one pasuk just to know where we are. Okay, the previous Ksukim described the construction of the Aron, and Pasuk Tetzayin said, Venatata el ha'aron, the Aron is basically a box, just so you know. It's three boxes, we did this in years past. There's a gold box, inside that's a wood box, inside that's another gold box. So it's basically a box of wood, covered on the inside and the outside with gold. It's got a couple of stands, it's got a couple of poles. Okay? Now, and inside the aron, you put the edut, asher etein ilacha, the testimony that I will give you. Okay? So now, v'asita kaporet zahav tahor. You shall make a kaporet of pure gold, that's 2.5 by 1.5. And then 2.5 by 1.5 matches exactly the 2.5 by 1.5 of the aron. So what is this kaporet? Anyone want to guess?
Does it go on top of the aron?
It goes on top of the aron. In other words, what would we call that?
A cover.
A cover. Okay? Great. You shall make a kaporet, which is a cover. Okay? If you look, Ibn Ezra says, I'm going to do more, the parshanim are critical here, kaporet is kidmut michseh. It's a michseh, it's a cover. Okay. Which only leads us to wonder, what?
Why is it called
a kaporet? It's not a michseh. Okay? So the Ibn Ezra goes on. He says, what does the word kaporet mean? How do we interpret the word kaporet? Kapara. What's kapara? Atonement. When you achieve, right, when you have avonot, when you have sins, and you achieve avonot, and you achieve atonement, what are we doing to your sins?
Nullifying
them. Are we?
We're turning them
into. You wish.
Right, if you do proper tshuva.
Kapara can accomplish that. Nasit kit. Okay, what are we doing when you have kaporet, mechaper, erase, cover, paper over?
It's a kisui.
It's a cover, right.
I don't know.
You don't like that?
I don't like it.
Okay. Okay. Ki kamohu lechaper Allah. That's exactly what he says. Ibn Ezra. If you have Ibn Ezra, you can see it. Ki debut michseh v'amar yefet, I think. Ki kamohu lechaper alav. Kamo kisui chata'a. That's exactly what Ibn Ezra says. It's covering over one's sins. From lechaper, Yom Kippur. It's the paper day, right? To cover over. We're covering over our sins. Okay? Ulefi da'ati.
As opposed to the chicken day.
Milat lechaper alav migzerat kofer. Kofer. The chaper is to exchange. Yom Kippurin is exchange, and that's what you were saying. It's more the exchange of the good for the bad. So what's a kaporet then? What is this kaporet? Is it a covering? It's an exchange? Okay?
Maybe it depends on us.
What?
Maybe it's the role that it plays depends on us.
How do you mean? The role of the kaporet?
If you deserve for it to be an exchange, then it serves as an exchange.
What's this thing do? What's this thing do? What's the job of this thing? What is it in this context? The kaporet is a cover,
yeah.
Right? It's the top of the box. We're going to see it's not just the top of the box. It's something much, much, much more significant than that. Okay. What? That's an excellent question. Do the kruvim sit on top of this kaporet? We'll see in a second. Let's see. Va'asita yudchet. Shnaim kruvim zahav, you shall make 2 golden kruvim, cherubs. Miksha ta'ase otam, mishnei kitzot hakaporet. You shall make them miksha. What does miksha mean? You familiar with this word?
One piece,
hewn, solid. You shall make them solid from the 2 edges of the kaporet. Va'asei, and you shall make kruv echad mikatsa mizeh, ukruv echad mikatsa mizeh, and you shall make 1 kruv from one end, and 1 kruv from another end. Min hakaporet ta'asu et hakruvim al shnei kitzotav. From the kaporet, you shall make the kruvim on its 2 kitzotav, its 2 edges. Okay.
Yes.
So now I ask you, what did you say again? What was the question?
Sit on top of it.
And your answer?
No, they're continuous
part
extension of it.
Okay, good. So how do you envision it? That's correct. How do you envision these kruvim working?
It actually looks like they can't grow out of
it. Right. I wanted to show you. I have this book there. Don't we have the book of the Mishkan somewhere? I got a Mishkan book.
No, I remember that.
One year I pulled it out. I'll drag it out if I can. Leia, is he eating? Mm-hmm. We'll see if I can ask her to find it. I need that. You know where the Mishkan book is? The Tabernacle book. Thanks. Okay. We'll see how they describe it, because in their description, you got this like flat box. Like if you think of, I mean, every male when you talk about the ark, what do we think of? Raiders of the Lost Ark, correct. So what did the Ark of the Covenant look like in Raiders? Ah, thank you very much, Leah. Okay, the Ark looked like it had a box, and on top of it, there was this thing. They don't make books like these anymore, you know? In the original version of this book, it had, this is it, in this book. They don't make books like this. How they did this color pictures is they printed the pictures separately and then glued them on. They don't make them like that anymore. Here we go.
Funny.
And let's see. I have the vessels. Here we go. Okay. See how they make it and the way that they sort of make it. Okay. There's a kruv echad mikatsa mizeh, and a kruv echad, but it looks like there's a box.
It looks like an etz chayim.
Looks like a box, and then on top of the box you got these, I don't know. Like that's an interesting question. Okay. What in the world are these things look like? So when you read it from the Torah, it seems exactly clear that the way you described it. It's not that these things were on top. It's not that these things were on top. I get the impression it's a kruv echad mikatsa mizeh, that it was the kruvim were actually part of the covering itself, almost like a
handle.
What?
Kind of like a handle.
Like a handle, right? Almost like a handle. That they're natural extensions of the covering of the kaparet itself.
They're actually joined.
So it looks like it physically joined. I don't think they were joined.
Not at the top.
Okay. There's also another problem with the crew with this picture. Once you see the picture, it's hard to imagine in your own mind what you think it's supposed to look like. Right. What were they? Okay. What did this crew look like?
Cherubs.
Cherubs. Thank you. We started with that. Right. Little fat guys. Right. Okay. So I wanted to show you that because we don't have any idea what it looked like, but it seems clear to me that that's wrong. Right. And I always thought about it then. When you read the psukim exactly. Okay.
Why would they have wings?
Moreover,
wings.
What?
Why would they have wings?
The kruvim.
Yeah.
Hold on. Bayu kruvim porsei knafayim lamala, because it says the next pasuk says, and the kruvim should be have their wings spread above. Sochachim bekanfehem al hakaporet, their laschach. They cover with their wings over the kaporet. Okay. Upnehem ish el achiv, el hakaporet yu pnei akruvim. They face ish el achiv,
each other.
The el hakaporet yu pnehem, and the kaporet. So second, they face each other. They have wings, and they also face the kaporet, even though they also are the kaporet. It's important to one. Let me make one point out. Mikshata se otam. Look at Rashi on Yudchet. Mikshata ase otam. Says Rashi. See it? Yudchet? Shelo ta'aseim bifnei atzmam v'ticha brem b'rashei ha-kaporet la'achar ha-siyatam. You cannot, right, make them separately and then attach them. It's a miksha. What else has to be miksha? Derech Agav, anybody know? The menorah has to be miksha. But here, the kruvim, this whole kaporet, is made of one piece. Okay? So, I don't know, we don't know how they made it, but to have them, like, come out from the kaporet, from this cover, it's almost impossible to imagine. But it's much easier to try to imagine, I think of my old notes, right? You have this kaporet, and then you start hewing it out, you start forming the wings, you start forming the shape out of the cover, right? And it becomes this form. That's easier at least to imagine, to try to figure out how to make it. Otherwise, how would you even hammer one block into the kruvim, one solid? I could see the menorah, right? The menorah is, you take a block of gold, you start chipping things away.
Yeah.
But here, you'd have, I mean,
at least one huge block of wood.
One huge block and start banging it out? Not wood, no, gold.
Gold,
it's metal.
Gold.
One solid piece of gold.
Oh, solid gold?
One solid gold. That's what Rashi says. It's one solid piece of gold.
When it's pure.
to melt it.
Like as a jewel under a master craftsman with the right tools.
Yeah.
If the gold was pure and not mixed with other alloys, then it was
pure
to
gold.
Some extent malleable.
Oh, sure, it would be malleable, but not bangable.
Well,
that's why I got the sense that they extruded it. And then were able to shape the shape out of the edges, and that's exactly what the Torah seems
but
to describe.
Jewelers have molds. No?
What?
Jewelers have molds. That's how they make things.
A lot of heat, a lot of manpower.
Yeah, they have to melt it.
Okay.
Or some miracle power in there.
Yeah, there was a miracle power.
Was it like Hashem helped them make this?
They didn't say. No, it does. With the Aron, it says that there was some divine whatever. Here it seems that they made it. They did what they were supposed to do. Okay? Where are we? We're on Chaf. Again, no, Chaf Aleph. What?
The purpose of the wings is to be a kisui.
Sochachim b'chanveihem al hakaporet upnehem ish el achiv el hakaporet yupnei hakruvim.
It's reminiscent of the Maasei HaMerkava that also describes that the Chayot HaKodesh that kind of surround Hashem have these wings and they face each other and there's this whole El Achiv Panim al Panim.
We say it every week in Kedusha. V'ha'ofanim v'chayot ha'kodesh v'ra'ash gadol mitnasim l'umat safim l'umatam mishabchim ramim. What does l'umatam mean? L'umatam? Facing each other. There's a very strong notion that the malachim all face each other. But you could say, it's reminiscent. Yechezkel seems to be... Correct. That there's this idea that there's this image and below, and it corresponds to an image above. Okay?
That's also the Shamayim and the Arif.
No? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, Chim B'chan Fehem. You mentioned Shamayim Marit. I saw it somewhere. I don't remember where. Maybe I'll find it before the end. Okay? Chaf Aleph. V'natata et ha-kaporet. Al ha-aron milmala. This kaporet goes on the aron above. Ve'el aharon titen et ha'edut asher etein elecha. And in the aron, you shall put the edut that I give you.
That doesn't make sense practically.
Well, meaning, what does it mean practically? What must
I mean?
Mean
practically, I would think you would first put the aron ha'edut in the aron, and then put the kaporet on top.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's what it means.
No, but it's not so obviously that's what it means, Mr. Midrash.
How are you supposed to... put it in if you have the covers on already.
Why is the order off?
Well,
because you didn't think of it doesn't mean it's not a good question.
I did think of it, but I rejected it out of hand. Chaf Bet. The bigger question, the larger question that all the Mefarshim are stuck on is, look at Chaf Aleph, right? Ve'el Aaron titen et ha'edut. You should put the IR at the edut. Right? Look back on Pasuk Tet Zayin. Right? Chaf Bet is a complete repetition of Tet Zayin.
It's underlined here already.
Oh, that's good. Okay. You should put an arrow one to the other.
Why? It's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So why, the question that all my question asks is, why does it repeat itself? Why did it see the same thing?
It's not the only pasuk that repeats itself in this section.
Okay. Says, and Chaf Bet. Go back to Chaf Bet. V'no adati l'cha sham. No adati, the root of no adati?
Edut.
Not edut necessarily. What's the root here? It's not edut. It's mo'ed. Right? Here, the key word is what the big Mishkan was also called Ohel Mo'ed. Right? Mo'ed is a meeting, a place of meeting. V'no adati l'cha? It's not that God will testify. I will make myself known to you. I will appear. I will have a meeting with you. V'dibarti itcha me'al hakaporet mi'ben shnei hakruvim asher al aron ha'idut. It's an incredibly specific, detailed description, location. Right? I will meet you. I will speak to you from where? On the kaporet, between the kruvim. That's on the Aron Ha'edut, okay? That's where I'm going to speak to you from. Asher et kol asher atzaveh otcha b'nei Yisrael. God will appear from that point. And it has to be in the Kruvim, on the Kaporet, in the Edut. So this isn't some standard box cover. But rather, the Kaporet itself serves as the place from where the presence of God emanates. And of course, we have to ask ourselves, So many questions. Which, like, what in the world, A, did this thing look like? Okay. B, and B, what messages are we supposed to learn from it? Okay. And then C, which is what we're going to end up with. This sounds, how shall I say this? You have the form of the angels, and each one faces another, and you have to form this shape of... Does that sound... does that remind you of anything that Torah tells you not to do?
Exactly.
Anyway, you're all thinking that. What in the world? How?
I always wondered that.
Yeah.
Why did Hashem choose to have His presence come from such a specific image?
When specifically, the third of the Ten Commandments, the second of the Ten Commandments, whichever one it was, is... Lo ta'aseh lecha pesel kol tmuna. How do we jive this idea of the absolute, complete prohibition against graven images with the idea that in the Kodesh HaKadosh, in the holiest place, in the absolute holiest place in existence, in our physical existence, there was a graven image. And had a form, and it had a shape, and it had a function. How do we jive those two things? And then I get to make my social commentary. So you have to stay to the end for that. Okay. First, what do these things look like? So, try to get Raiders of the Ark out of your head, right? What did the Kruvim themselves look like? So, in order to answer that question, we have to look at the Parshanim. First one. 1 second. What?
They know
they're basing on the Chazal. Look at Rashbam on Yud Chet. We'll go back. We're going to see a few different interpretations. Rashbam says, Kruvim, says Rashbam, Ofot. They look like birds. Kidichtiv. Et kruv mimshach hasochech of gadol bal knafayim. That's from Yechezkel. Right? The kruv was a bird. Okay, it had the shape of a bird.
Yechezkel,
chavchet yudalet. Yeah. We're trying to understand why is a kruv called it? Why is a cabbage called a kruv?
The leaves. Yes, the leaves go over the leaves.
Right.
At
first. Right.
Like this.
They're very tight.
And they're tight, but they go like this on each other.
Yeah. And what do you do with a kruvit? So why is the cauliflower? It's also stuck together?
You said
cauliflower in the middle. She asked me when your cheskel it was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're sort of like haggard.
It sounds good. Aren't there people that, I'm sure there's a reason, there's like all etymology of why is a cabbage called a kruv? I don't know. What? Yes. Correct.
So maybe just they could have chosen those words.
Correct.
But what was that?
A lot of modern Hebrew words
with these. But they're all traced. They all sort
of. Somebody do a Wikipedia search. Why is it? Okay. If the information's out there, it's not, oh, you're doing it already. Whoever, somebody's got to put up a site about the etymology of Hebrew words. Okay. You found it? So Rashbam says...
Which one was it in?
Yechavchet Yudalid.
Okay. At kruv mimshach
ha-sochech. At kruv.
At kruv mimshach ha-sochech.
Go on. So he translates that as of gadol bal knafayim. And that's one. One interpretation is it's a bird. Ibn Ezra says...
It's a plane.
1 second.
It's a cabbage.
Ibn Ezra on Yudchet. Amru kadmonenu. You're laughing, but hold on a second. Amru kadmonenu. Kitsurat kruvim kishne ne'arim. Okay? The form of kruvim is like two ne'arim. Yutz.
Well, Rashbam brings a second opinion.
Yeah, does he say that one?
He says
pneitino. Oh, babies. Okay? Ne'arim, children.
Cherubic.
But that's based on ne'arim. What he really means is also children. Okay, Na'arim is also children. They, in their context, it wasn't babies, it was young children, as we'll say. Okay? Why? Look at the rest. Ibn Ezra continues. Upirshu, in Aramaic, they said, Kirubaya. Rubaya are babies. Na'arim, children. So it's not kruv. The question is it kruv one word, or kirub? Kirubaya. So in Chazal, in Aramaic, said it wasn't one word, but it was kruva, it was keruv. Okay, that it was like a child. That's how they interpreted it. And that it's a machloken. Okay? And then Ibn Ezra goes on to say, I don't think so. Okay? I mean, I think the kaf of kruv is the shoresh. Of kaf resh bet, kruv. Yes.
Says it's not connected.
What does he say? You got it?
Yeah.
What does he say?
Wait,
first of all, where did you find it?
I Googled the Hebrew etiology of Hebrew word cabbage.
Yeah, okay, what does he say?
It says, what do angels and cabbages have in common?
Huh?
Well, they both share the Hebrew word kruv, but except for Jastrow, who provides the unconvincing shared etymology around, no one says they share a common root. For kruv is the biblical word meaning angel, recognized clearly in the English word cherub.
Klein right.
Provides the following etymology.
Okay, what's the cabbage one? What does he say for cabbage? I told you, everything's on the internet now. You just have to know.
He doesn't say anything.
He doesn't say why it's cabbage?
Okay, okay. Kruv meaning cabbage entered Hebrew in Talmudic times. Ben Yehuda introduced the related kruvit, cauliflower. As to the etymology of kruv, Klein writes, together with Aramaic, kruva, krova, Syrian, karva, borrowed from Greek krumbe, which is related to krumbos, equals dry shriveling, krumbion to roast, and cognate with Old German, hifrun, rimfrun, to contract wrinkle, Old English.
Basically, not related. What's what at all? At all? Okay, but that does remind me of when you said a crembo, right? They, why do they call it a crembo?
Could
it
be? Because it's a case.
No, because it's
marshmallow encased in chocolate.
Well, you know why? Because it's crembo, but it's the same shape as the groove.
Cute.
You're so dismissive. Anyway,
I'm rejecting it out of hand.
You're rejecting it out of hand. Okay, that's one. So we saw a bird. We saw children, okay? And then, now, if you look at Kliyakar says, one second, okay, Shnei kruvim b'dmut malachim, kruvim, Shnei kruvim. It's not called, the malachim are not called kruvim because they're like the kruvim here, but rather these kruvim are called kruvim because they're like the angels. That's the name. Cherub is the name. That's what you said. Yeah, that was what you said. Cherub is the name of the angel. And so this thing is based on the angel, and he says, Udmut yeladim ktanim. It looks like small children. Okay, they were, so maybe they're
I
like the
cabbage patch kids.
Really? Well, how would you get your cabbage patch pitch on the end
that's
of a on the end of a piece of gold?
No, okay.
Okay, so we got birds, and then there's one more piece that's really important to note. There's one more piece that's important to note. Okay? Sforno says, I'm just going to quote it for you. The Sforno says, Kvaramu, meaning this is Chazal said, the Kruvim were Zachar unikeva hayu. One was male and one was female. Sforno. Okay? So there we had, so what do we have? We have these two angelic pseudo birds, one male, one female. So what do they look like?
Children.
Nobody's in here. I just want to point that out. So like, we have no idea. I mean, to be honest with you, if it wasn't for this thing, which shows them stuck on top, right? This wouldn't be so bad, right? Form of a bird, face of a girl and a boy. That's what they tried. They really tried very hard to try to combine all of these different things.
One face is a boy, one is a girl, or both had dual...
Well, I thought one was male, one was male, and one was female. That's the way I understood it. One was male and one was female.
But one was facing each other.
What? They're male, but they had faces of male and female, I guess. Right.
Or just androgynous.
I personally think that it wasn't that specific. It was much more artistic. I think it was much more artistic in nature. Think of it as like more of an abstract kind of sculpture.
It sounds to me like they're two-faced. If they're looking at each other and they're looking down.
Yeah. They had two faces?
Well, I don't know.
I always thought that they were looking at an angle at each other. I got you. Looking at both. We'll get there. Yeah. Okay.
But could be one side was male.
Oh, we'll get there.
When they describe the seraphim, don't they have face on four sides?
What?
When they describe it, I think it's the seraphim. They have like face all around.
The seraphim have face all around. Are you familiar?
There's,
I'm not familiar with that. Okay. She's looking on YouTube. I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
Yes. Step back and ask the big
question.
So what? Who cares? Question.
Yes.
I just did.
So what, who cares?
Yeah, why are you, like, why are you so hung up on what the kruvim look like?
One second, but we're only halfway in. We'll get there.
Well,
there's
a big... I think it's significant that the Torah dedicates and gives some meaning to it, so...
Right.
But if it gives it a lot of airtime in the Torah...
Don't you want to know what it looks like?
And...
Don't, isn't it... It's critical to me, actually, that this...
If it's a bird or if it's a child...
I think the image of the child is an innocence versus the wings of an eagle. An eagle.
So you're asking what's the symbolism? That was part two. But I think it's important. I don't know. I think when you study, don't you want to know what the psukim say? I think it's important to know. I think it's important to understand this. I think is very. That's why I think it's much more abstract. That, you know what I'm saying? That it's one piece. It's all this one piece. It's this cool cover.
Have they started to build it? Try to?
I don't think they tried the arrow. Have they tried them? They have an arrow?
I think so.
Oh, we're gonna have to take a look at that this week.
I'm
going on Friday.
When?
The boys are the week
amazing.
Afterwards. The big boys are the next week.
Yes.
Right.
Have you ever been there?
This week? He's coming this week? I'm going this week with the Hebrew. Yeah, I'm going to Betzalel. That's one of the things I love about being in a yeshiva like this. Like you said, the manas does nice things. The cultural experiences, the cultural events are like, wow, we're finishing Daf Yomi. Let's go to the Kotel and have a tour of Machon HaMikdash. It's nice.
It was my favorite place that I've ever visited.
What?
I think about what Rambam meant when he said outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's just a
refreshment. Yeah. I think it's much more than that. Okay. So Rina wants to know, what does this all mean? Okay. So we're gonna do a few different interpretations. Some you will like, and some you might not like. Correct. Okay. And because I want to show you, what basically I'd like to demonstrate to you is, you could say, you could use this symbolism, which is, how shall I say it? You have the Ish El Achiv. You have the man and the woman facing the male and the female. You have the children. You have innocence. You have the kaporet. You could say pretty much anything you want. Okay? You could use symbolism. This is the power of vague symbolism. You could use it to describe anything you want to say. You could use it to describe any message you want to convey. Okay? And obviously, Chazar are going to do that in the way that they want. Let's look at Kli Yakar. If you have Kli Yakar, you can look at it.
Pasta?
Yud Zayin. You want to start with the Midrash? We could start with the Midrash.
You should tell me which books to bring, because it's hard to
know. I always have the Midrash, and I have one of the whatever.
What, the Ushnei Kruvim?
You could bring two, I'm sorry.
Over there?
Bring the one with the Midrash.
Okay, we'll do that. Hold on, let's start with the Midrash. She's right. Let's start with the Midrash. Before we start with the Kli Yakar.
Bring your whole library.
Right. Says the Midrash. Okay. Yud Zayin. See it on Yud Zayin?
Yeah.
Vasita kaporet zahav?
Yeah.
We didn't ask this question. Lama shal zahav?
Zeh.
Okay. Why zahav? What's the pshat?
Zahav
shal egel. Oh, you looked. Okay. Yavo zahav shal kaporet v'yichaper al zahavo shal egel.
Kapara.
Right? What's that?
Kapara for the egel zahav?
Correct. But this only makes sense if?
If this was made after.
What?
After
this only makes sense if this actually happened after the Egel HaZahav.
Why wouldn't it?
There's no.
What do you mean?
No.
What Chazal say is Zod Chukat HaTorah. They say that the Para Aduma comes as a kapara for the Egel HaZahav. Sure, they get a kapara.
It was never a kapara for the. It was something that would be for generation.
Oh.
We discussed that the Egel HaZahav changed our relationship. We definitely discussed it, that it changed our relationship with God. There's a difference between saying that there's that it changes and that there's no kapara. You can have atonement. We talked about that. Could it either be a switch or a papering over? I guess depending on how well you do.
But
very good, Tammy. Well, that's only if that's one opinion. One opinion says that the Mishkan came after. Some say before. Okay. The next one, Kaporet, it was Mechaperet al Avonotam Shel Yisrael.
Before they got the Torah, they had the Aron?
What's that?
No.
So then what are you saying?
What do you mean? They got the Torah at Har Sinai.
Yeah,
no.
Did
the Egel HaZahav happen before this or not? There's a huge machloket whether the story that in Kitisa that appears later on in the Torah happened before this, and the commandment for the giving of the Mishkan was somehow switched. Okay, in the if we read it the way we're reading it now, chronologically, God told us to build the Mishkan, and then we see
the Egel HaZahav happened, and then we built the Mishkan.
Correct.
He knew it was going to happen.
Correct.
It happened between.
Right, but so this Midrash is saying that's not true. The Midrash is saying the Egel HaZahav happened, and sort of as a reaction to it came the commandment to build the Kaporet. What's fascinating, Tammy, is this Midrash is saying something deeper. Right, there's some Mefarshim that say that the Egel HaZahav wasn't idolatry per se. But it was a desire of the Jewish people to focus their spirituality on something tangible. Okay, we're going to come to this at the end. And as a result... As a result, comes God and says, your desire is a positive desire. But unless you channel it in the proper way, in the way that I tell you to channel it, it could lead to destruction.
Makes sense.
It's idolatry. So therefore comes the Torah and says, you can only channel it in the way that I say to channel it, as opposed to something else.
And this will
come to
it's okay.
This will come to at the end. Yeah, very good. This will come to at the very end. That's right. That's the answer.
Wait,
we're ahead of ourselves. That's my social commentary. Okay. Yeah.
Well, no, I just think that maybe if you want to take more of the chronological view, there can be a command given. Then a sin happens, and then when the command is actualized, it takes on a different meaning.
Oh, okay.
Like,
100%. 100%.
100%. Works out of the context of chronological time, that that he created the kapara before the
right.
before the makkah, so that when the
I would say even stronger. I would say even stronger than that. God created it knowing that it would happen, even though they weren't actually hadn't done it yet, and
right.
it wasn't necessarily so that they had to do it.
That's what I'm saying.
I agree.
So
I agree.
It was in place that when they did do it, that's a
stronger right. Like cures are in place before.
Diseases.
Yeah. I agree. I accept that. Says Kliyakar. Okay. Yud Zayin Kaporet. Kisui Milamala. He said something fascinating. It's a covering. Why do you need a covering?
Kliyakar? Who's that?
Why do you need a cover for the arm? I mean, we assume it's natural you need a cover, but not all vessels had a cover. The Shulchan didn't have a cover. The Mizbeach didn't have a cover.
Because it didn't have something inside.
The whole thing's inside. Why think about this way? If you assume, excuse me, wait. It's natural for you that when you have an Aron Kodesh, there's a parochet. But that's because the Beit HaMikdash had a parochet. Why not? Would it be more natural when you come into the shul, and you see the Torah?
Then you can never sit.
Something precious. Something precious is covered. Are covered.
What?
Your body.
The mezuzah is covered.
I don't necessarily agree with the total equation of the body, the center of the body. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit different. Because that's chomer. And while it's the holiest thing, of course, but it's chomer. We cover it in order to distinguish between Kodesh and Chol. Here is the most Kodesh thing. Wouldn't it make sense? Like, you know, what's really fascinating is what image do we put on top of every Aron Kodesh?
A picture of the Torah
or the Ten Commandments. You know what I'm saying? We take the most hidden thing and we're like, put it on top, even though it's not really the thing. But then on the inside, the actual Torah itself, we keep hidden.
Can I suggest something?
You could, please.
The luchot that went into the Aron, or the broken luchot.
The luchot and the shivrei luchot, both.
Both.
Okay. No, the main luchot also.
But the shivrei luchot are also in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And going back to the concept of it being a kapara for what brought about the broken luchot, you don't want to parade around the broken luchot.
Yeah, but you mean...
Why wouldn't they be around?
Well, wait a second. Originally, that goes back to Nikki's point. Was it originally intended that the luchot be broken?
I'm going with this whole...
Wasn't it originally intended that the luchot wouldn't be broken?
I'm going with the approach of this being of what you said before with the kapara.
Okay, I'll accept that. But it's
that line of...
I accept that.
When something's valuable to you, you want to protect it. And you protect it by providing a cover around it as a kind of...
Okay, so look what Kliyakar says. Look at what Kliyakar says. Remez, shetzarich lechasot sodot haTorah, shelo legalotam berabim. This is the remez that you must cover over the secrets of the Torah and not reveal them in public.
Nice, nice.
He said, "It's just." It made me think. It's a fascinating question.
Who says that?
The Kliyakar.
That to so many.
Yeah, places. Yeah. The idea of. To what degree do we want secrecy, and to what degree... Because you could say, one could say, that this reveals... All it's talking about here is, like, Kabbalistic ideas. That there's idea of sod. Sodot HaTorah. That the secrets of the Torah...
What did the Kruvim look like?
Mm.
sword.
That's not a sword. Whatever. What would it be?
So, Kabbalah, like, so the secret angels looking like involved there? Of course there is.
But you could take it in a much larger direction and to say, and I don't know if he's alluding to this, that not everything is a subject of public debate. Because, and he's not just talking about mysticism per se, but that there are things, and I actually read it this way also, but people will have trouble with this, especially in today's day and age, that everybody all of a sudden now considers himself a Talmudic scholar, and that they know everything, and therefore they have a right to debate every single issue, and there's no concept of Kodesh and Chol, of this is your place, and this is my place. And that this is something that I have to revere and venerate, and that opinion, that place is more important than me. And the question is, to what degree do you want to take that, you know, that secrecy? It just reminds me, yesterday I was reading something about Lahavdil Bibi. He was talking about at Davos, and he was talking about Israel is leading in the world in technological developments. Really, it's unbelievable. It's ridiculous how much Israel, how many companies there are.
Yeah.
He says, the idea of the internet and the information age is incredible. You could know anything you want to know at the touch of a button. You want to know about what the word kruv means? It's at the touch of the button. So there's a problem, though, because this internet, these networks are porous. Right? Nations are built on secrecy. Whether you like it or not, every nation has to have its secrets. Everything you hold dear has to be, you can't, not everything is meant, not all laundry was meant to be, right? What? Oh, but in today's day and age, it's so challenging because the internet was meant to be open. We believe all information should be free. I don't want to pay you for that. It's on the internet. Everybody can use it.
Not anymore.
What?
Not anymore.
Everything is free if you know how to get it.
SEC just passed a ruling.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But so Bibi actually talked about the idea that Israel is also leading in the idea of cybersecurity. You know what I'm saying? There were, you know, many, many major companies, many of the biggest companies in the world, right? Banks, yeah, we lead their security. And if you think that for a second that somehow the Shin Bet doesn't have its, you know, tentacles in those companies, you're kidding yourself also. But, so are there really secrets? So this idea of sodut is very fascinating. Tzarich l'chasot sodot ha-Torah, Dvarim shekisa atik yomin al tegale otam. Those things that were covered, atik yomin, historically, they should not be revealed.
Could he be talking about
what the practice is? That's what I'm alluding to. That there are things that, not everybody's business, in a sense. And then that's my social commentary to the end of this idea of trust and reverence.
Versus,
what? Yes.
He could be.
But again, symbolism is all what you want it to be. If you would ask him, do you mean that? He probably would say yes. But if you would ask somebody today, do you want to read that into the Kruvim? Probably today might say, that's taking things a little too far. You know what I'm saying? Again, that's the beauty and the power of symbolism.
Well, and I think that it's a little, while I accept everything that you said, I think that it's definitely drash to say that sodot ha-Torah means secrecy. Secrets and secrecy are two different things, I think. Like, meaning deeper levels of the Torah that only... Is it...
The very idea that something like sod exists, why is that only in the mystical sense? We accept that there's something we can't appreciate and understand, but we only want to confine that to the sense of, you know, the heebie-jeebies and with the kruvim and the angels and stuff we can't understand. But when it comes to, you know, understanding the logic of the Torah or the workings of the Torah or how it leads us, no, we have to understand everything. That anybody can understand.
I can accept also that those are so dope, but...
Right.
I can't articulate it, but I think I just put down, I see a difference between secrecy, which I see in a more negative way,
mm-hmm.
and secrets, which I see...
Why do you see secrecy in a negative way?
Why?
That's an interesting question.
Why do you see secrecy?
Yeah. Somebody's trying to hide something from you.
Right, whereas secrets are... Well, the entire...
Maybe sometimes the Rabbanu Shalom hides things from us for our benefit.
What about Lagba Omer?
Right. Wouldn't you think?
What about Lagba Omer? Only secrets were revealed when we're ready for them.
Uh huh. Well,
I mean, Shia was coming. I'm sure there are more.
Deeper meaning. There are treasures within the words of the Torah that the deeper you look in, the more is revealed. So the Torah is covered, and yet you need to open it to reveal it. Everything is like symbolic symbolism.
You know, there's a very famous story in the Gemara about the Chazal, Arba Nichnasu LePardes, right? Four enter the Pardes, the garden. The question is, what does the garden really mean? What did they try to unreal? What did they try to understand? And what happened to them? So the Gemara says that four of them, do you remember they were? Yeah, so help me out here. I don't remember.
Yehuda came out okay.
Right.
Elisha ben Avuya
became a kof. Became
went off
a
the deep
went
end.
Off the. No, he didn't go off the
he
deep end.
He went off the deep end religiously.
He went off the derech.
He became a kofer.
Right. He didn't go off the deep end. Yeah.
One of them went off.
Ben Zoma and I don't remember who the last one. One of them died.
One of them died, and one of them went crazy. Right. So sometimes the secrets are that Gemara is clearly trying to teach us something. Anyway, let's go on to the Kliyaka because he says something else. He says Shnei Kuvim. Bidmut ha'Elohim malachim shnikru kruvim udmut yeladim tanim. They were the form of angels and of small children. Laharot. So he says that the kruvim represent the Torah. Okay, and they represent the teaching of the Torah because it was obviously covering over the Torah. So to teach you, she'im harav domeh lemalach Hashem tzvaot. So it's talking about how should rabbis act. If the rabbi acts like a malach of Hashem, like an angel, v'hu naki min hachet ketinok ben shana. And he is clean from sin, like a year-old child. Az yivakshu Torah mipihu. Then they will want to study from him. V'tzarich liyot naki me'elokim v'adam. And you also have to be clean, both from God and from human beings. Ki latzei didei shamayim, hayu kruvim posei knafayim l'mala. Right? In the shamayim, they were posei knafayim. So it's interesting. Do you see posei knafayim? It's interesting. In this one, sochim b'chan fehem. No. Do you see them like this? Or do you see them like this? In the image that we saw, it was facing down. But in the image of the Kliyakar, it was Porsei Kanafayim Lamala, seeking God.
I thought they moved.
What? We'll see in a second. Okay. Well, I'd say, today habriyot hayu pneihem ish el achiv. But in order, so they were speaking God and also looking at each other at the same time. Which is fascinating. That's a beautiful image, isn't it? That we like. Okay. Right. Okay? To speak about the shalom between those who love the Torah. And anybody knows anything about people who love Torah, sometimes, l'shem shamayim, there isn't shalom.
It's not l'shem shamayim.
One second. Here we go. Wait one second. Okay, the hayu yachdav to amim b'shalom v'reiut, and they were twins in peace and brotherhood. El hakaporet yupnei akruvim. So remember, they're looking at each other. Their faces are down at the kaporet. I don't know. It's like a Japanese bow, like you know, I'm looking up. Okay, to teach you what shakom migamat pneihem yeh el hatorah sheba aron. The focus of their faces should be towards the Torah. Lo keotan, not like those rabbis, asher hema chachamim be'enehem, they consider themselves chachamim, v'dorshim l'chvod atzmam, v'lo l'chvod ha-Torah. And their goal is for their own self-aggrandizement, and not the cover of the Torah. Very fine line. So, parshim kanfehem, their hands up in the sky towards God. They face each other because they care about am l'chaveru in peace. Their orientation is down towards the Torah because even while the Klape Shemaya and towards mankind, their orientation is still only the Kavod Torah and not for their own self-aggrandizement. Is that better?
Yeah.
You like that one?
It's better.
Okay, very good. So that's one of the symbols that the Kliyaka sees in this idea of the Kruvim themselves. If you look at, you can look at later on if you want to, you can look at the Sforno. He says that the Kruvim refer to the Seichel HaNivdal, the human intellect, mm-hmm. and how one must use his intellect in order to achieve godliness. Yeah, that's interesting. I had to bring you Aznayim the Torah, okay, Rav Suretskin, just to show you, because I wanted to show you exactly how different Parshanim use the symbolism. So he says the following. He says, why does it have to be pure gold? Okay. Tukruvim. Akruvim hayu domim l'tinokot, children. Why? L'lamed al hachinuch shel hayiladim. To teach us about chinuch. How do we do chinuch? Shehem mevusas al haTorah. It has to be based on Torah. V'lo sheit asku b'chachmot achirot. And they shouldn't learn any other things. What? That's exactly what he says. Okay. I know he's very Haredi. I wanted to tell you that. Okay. Shehar. Wait a second. And he says, wait a second. Sha'ah. V'achar kach yil medui mahem sha'ah ushtaim dat el. And then they have to learn about religion. Dat el.
Dat or dat?
It says dat. Dat, not dat.
So what's religion if it's not Torah? Halacha.
Mm-hmm. What?
Shehakrav
makshem min hakaporah asher lahaidut. It has to be philosophy. Emuna, I think he means. So he learns Gemara, and then 1 hour is of Emuna, and it has to be one makshe. There's no two pieces here, the Kruvim. It's one whole piece. Well, no, meaning there's unity of purpose in what the children learn. V'im lachu kirav, they took one, v'amido alatana kaporet pasul. There's no two ways about it. There's no I learned this and I learned that. It's all one thing. Chaticha achat im hakaporet. Okay? One second. And then he goes on. He says, there's a very famous Gemara. The Gemara says in Baba Batra, somewhere, I don't remember. He quotes a Gemara. The Gemara says, yeah, Baba Batra. Okay? That when Shlomo HaMelech put the Kruvim in the Beit HaMikdash, the Kruvim were not Pnehem Ish El Achiv, but rather the Kruvim were each one next to the other. El Pnei HaBayit. Moreover, the Kruvim on the Mishkan were whole, total gold. The Kruvim of the Beit HaMikdash were wood covered with gold. Everybody understand? Okay, in the Beit HaMikdash, wood covered with gold facing the Bayit. He says, what is that? Okay. He says, Lazhiret Yisrael, to warn the Jewish people, She'im ya'amidu et ha'chinuch b'neihem al ha'aretz, if they base their children's education on ha'aretz, al shar ha'chochmot, az yeh p'neihem l'bayit. Then all they're worried about is l'bayit themselves. Yivne b'mala atzmo. V'az tirbena ha'miflagot ha'mitpororot b'machane Yisrael. And then the divisions will include increase in Israel. Ki yashmi yishamet ha'basis. Because the basis will be gone. And then he goes on and said, but, okay, if therefore, Shlomo ha'amid et ha'kuvim, Shlomo stood the kuvim, l'hazhir et b'nei Yisrael ala chinuch ha'chiloni, to warn the Jewish people about secular education. Don't do it, because then it's b'nei el habayit. Of course, I don't understand how he says, Shlomo put this in the Beis HaMikdash about the Aaron, but whatever.
It also depends on what you define as.
But what I wanted to show you, why did I bring this, not just to annoy Rina, I wanted to show you that everyone, it could be whatever you want it to be. It could be absolutely whatever you want it to be. We'll stop. We'll end with one point. The point we asked, the question we asked about the question of Avodah Zarah. We sort of answered it. He brings a couple of different interpretations. This is Rav Nachshoni. Some of you may have it in the English. There's a great translation, exactly in English. Nachshoni on the Parsha. And he brings this idea. He says, a bunch of different Parshanim say that there's a number of mitzvot where you're permitted something and prohibited at the same time. For example, shatnez, totally prohibited. Except tzitzit. In fact, midoraita, if when we know we have the right tchele, they're supposed to be ideally made out of shatnez. Kedilim ta'ansacha, right? Okay, lo tiba shatnez. You're not allowed, a person is forbidden from marrying his sister-in-law, his brother's wife. Except yibum. So there's all these examples where the Torah precisely prohibits something, and it gives you almost exactly the same act in a different context or a different situation, and says that's a mitzvah. So to show you when.
So if it's kedusha, then like you don't just do it stam; you do it with for only reasons of holiness.
No, that Hashem defines.
That Hashem defines, right?
Correct. That it to me it represents this idea of highlighting this idea that what defines appropriate and inappropriate, what defines holy and profane, isn't our understanding necessarily of holy and profane. But there's a higher understanding, there's a mitzvah commandment, there's an element of submission and commandedness. And this, I think, is something that in our community we don't emphasize enough. Right? We are, you know, a combination, we try to find a balance. We're not the Rav Saretskin, we don't follow necessarily the Shita of Rav Saretskin, only Torah. We're trying to find a balance between in our lives between the ancient wisdom and deep spirituality and holiness of the Torah, and trying to infuse that into our modern lives. We're trying to find some sense of balance. But sometimes I feel like very much we've gotten out of whack, and that modernity has taken its hold on us with its values. And to that degree, when we can fit the spirituality of the Torah in, then we like that, and that's good. But if it doesn't really fit, and I don't think we do this in practice, because in practice we're Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. But in ideology or in thought, do we sometimes say, oh, well, I struggle with that, I don't really understand that, and kind of ignore, or kind of, how should we say, intellectually disengage from the things we don't understand, as opposed to intellectually submit to the things that we can't appreciate. And I think that's all the difference in the world. To say, there's a time when Ribbono Shel Olam said, we're not allowed to create molten images, we're not allowed to create a Avodah Zarah. Alright, but what about the Kruvim? Right, because Ribbono Shel Olam said that's the pinnacle of holiness, and that's the absolute degradation of idolatry. Ah, they look the same to me. Yeah, but you're not him, you're you. And he said to do that, and he said not to do that. And that's something that I think that's missing in us. That, oh, but I don't understand the difference. You don't understand the difference, it's okay. You don't have to always understand the difference. We're commanded, we're mitzuvim. And that's something that I think that we in our community, all of us, have to work on more, and need to emphasize more, and have to start talking about more. Because we're really good at the modernity. But being submissive to an ancient value, and a Masorah that's spanned our entire history, that we could use a little work on. End of my session. What? Yeah. I'm not an philosopher. Help me.
We'll use the example of
Lilith
and the being commanded to sacrifice his son. Right? We know that we can't sacrifice our children.
Right.
And it's not ethical. So we have this quandary, like we think that this is a not ethical act. And he says, no, but in that moment, that was the ethical act, because that was the command of God.
Right.
So it's God's command that defines
God's command that defines our morality, in a sense. And I think that's something we have to focus on. All right, we'll stop here. Mm-hmm.